This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Justice sues Google. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Wednesday, October 21st. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The Justice Department has filed a lawsuit against search giant Google, claiming the company engages in antitrust practices that stifle competition.
President Trump is encouraging the Attorney General to launch an investigation into Democratic rival Joe Biden over business dealings in China and Ukraine.
White House and Democratic negotiators are expected to continue discussing a coronavirus stimulus bill after making progress yesterday.
And with the Dodgers beating the Rays in Game 1 of the World Series, a look at each team's approach to payroll.
This is the ultimate in haves and have-nots in terms of a World Series matchup. On the one side, you have the Dodgers, who really are the epitome of blue blood in baseball. This is a team that has spent more money on players than anybody in the league in the last 7, 8, 9 years.
Jared Diamond at the Wall Street Journal on the Dodgers' willingness to spend versus the Rays' frugality. President Trump campaigned yesterday in the battleground state of Pennsylvania, telling supporters at an airport rally in Erie that he needed a second term in the White House to ensure a successful recovery from the novel coronavirus pandemic and its economic fallout. The president said Pennsylvania could put him over the top in 13 days.
We will continue to cut your taxes, cut regulations, support our great police, protect our Second Amendment. Defend our borders.
Meanwhile, Democratic rival Joe Biden has been home since an event Sunday and is not holding campaign events until after tomorrow night's final debate. Separately, polling by Reuters Ipsos shows that in the battleground states likely to decide the winner, the race is closer than in national polls. On a related note, the Trump campaign spent less than $56 million on television and radio advertising in September, compared with nearly $148 million by the Biden campaign. The Justice Department is charging Google with antitrust violations for what it sees as stifling competition and harming consumers in online search and advertising. The federal government argues Google unfairly has struck lucrative deals to maintain its 90% control of the world's online search market. For example, Google pays Apple billions of dollars a year to have its search engine as the default on iPhones and other devices. The Justice Department also says Google has contracts with smartphone makers that use Google's Android mobile operating system to make its search engine the default there, too. U.S. Deputy Attorney General Jeff Rosen.
The government does not enforce the antitrust laws to enable competition. We could lose the next wave of innovation.
Google says the government's antitrust case is deeply flawed, and these agreements don't box out competitors. Its parent company, Alphabet, has a market value, by the way, of just over $1 trillion. Brent Kendall, legal affairs correspondent at the Wall Street Journal, says the Justice Department lawsuit marks the most aggressive U.S. legal challenge to a company's dominance in the tech sector in more than two decades, with the potential to shake up Silicon Valley and beyond. Brent, explain.
The allegation here is in a sense, that Google is engaged in a variety of anti-competitive tactics that preserve its monopoly. I mean, the government says, look, there's nothing wrong with having a monopoly. Google clearly was a successful, innovative company, and it created, you know, this search product that most everybody uses to find information they want on the web. And the government says, well, that's fine. You know, Google at some point crossed the line. And now through a whole variety of arrangements, revenue sharing deals where they pay companies like Apple to have, you know, Google be the preset default on the Safari browser on iPhone, that Google has basically paid business partners to make Google the default pretty much across the board. And so that's created a circumstance where there's just not enough room for anybody else who wanted to compete with Google. There's just not enough room for them to get users and build a base to create a, you know, a successful competing product.
All right, so the government could want what here or request what?
At minimum, the government would like to undo some of these contractual arrangements that keeps Google as the default, whether it's on desktop or on iPhones or on Android phones. It would like to make it easier for rivals to have their apps pre-installed on Android, make it easier to delete Google apps if that's what a consumer wanted. The government also hinted basically, though, that undoing those kinds of past agreements that Google has entered into isn't going to be enough here, and that more is going to be necessary. It hasn't really said what that is yet. I mean, it's hinted at that it might want what it calls structural relief, which in normal terms basically means potentially like breaking up parts of Google. I mean, it's too soon to say how they would want to do that, whether this would be sort of a widespread breakup, if this is just cleaving off certain pieces of the business. And the department can't do this on its own. I mean, it first has to go into court and prove that Google has behaved in an unlawful manner, and then it could ask a judge to impose, you know, a whole range of remedies to address the allegedly illegal conduct.
We speak with Brent Kendall, legal affairs correspondent at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "The Justice Department Files Antitrust Lawsuit Against Google." What if Google's partners, for example, that have entered into these contracts don't want change because they like the way Google performs and it makes their product better?
Well, I mean, that is a big piece of Google's argument. I mean, Google says, look, you know, we have these business partners because it's a mutually beneficial arrangement, and everybody knows our products and services are better, and that the reason consumers like us is because, you know, we're good at what we do, and we don't have to force people to use our products and services. And they say it's not really any different than, you know, whether it's Coca-Cola or some cereal maker, you know, paying a supermarket chain to get certain product placement in their store, that it's better for all companies involved. But, you know, I think part of the real difference of opinion here is on consumer behavior. I mean, the government basically says, look, most people are just going to do whatever the default is. And so that means Google by default is the search champion, even if that's not what people want. And Google says, look, people are savvy. They, you know, people download billions of apps a year. If they don't want to use us, they don't have to. And they know that it's pretty easy to just go install somebody else's app and to do something, you know, other than us.
Mm. All right. So lots of investigations of Google, right? You reference state attorneys general.
That's right. So we had 11 state AGs. All Republicans joined the federal lawsuit. You may see more join on. There are additional states that are pursuing other potential legal arguments related to Google's search business, and so they may file their own case or seek to have it joined with the Justice Department case. And then almost every state is involved in a related investigation into Google's what's called its ad tech business. Basically, that Google owns all these tools that everybody uses to buy and sell ads throughout the internet, and that, you know, gives them an unlawful advantage. And so we are likely to see a case down the road, at least from the state making that argument. So we're going to have multiple legal fronts likely here that Google's going to have to deal with.
Thanks, Brent. Brent Kendall, legal affairs correspondent at The Wall Street Journal. 14 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, see how we can help at planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. President Trump wants Attorney General William Barr to initiate an investigation into former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter in the wake of New York Post reports that suggest the former vice president was involved in or benefited from his son's overseas work.
He's got to act, and he's got to act fast. He's got to appoint somebody. This is major corruption, and this has to be known about before the election.
He was on Fox News. Mr. Biden was asked about the Post stories in an interview with WISN Television in Wisconsin.
This is the same garbage Rudy Giuliani, Trump's henchman. It's a last-ditch effort in this desperate campaign to smear me and my family.
The emails regarding Hunter's business in Ukraine include a May 2017 threat about remuneration packages for six people as part of a business deal with a now-defunct Chinese energy firm. According to the emails, both Bidens were in line in 2017 to benefit from the deal. The Wall Street Journal says such a transaction raises questions about how Mr. Biden would handle China as president. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Trump's most powerful Senate ally is pressing the White House not to move ahead on a pandemic relief package. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told fellow Republicans he has warned the White House not to divide Republicans by sealing a $2 trillion relief deal with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi before the election. Pelosi's office says talks with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin yesterday were productive, but other lawmakers say there is not enough time to enact a relief bill by Election Day.
Number two.
Nearly 300,000 people have died in the U.S. so far this year, with at least two-thirds due to COVID-19. The CDC says about 216,000 deaths from coronavirus had been reported by the middle of October, but the numbers were likely undercounted. Infections continue to surge, especially in the Midwest. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine.
We have 216 new hospitalizations reported in the past 24 hours. It's the highest number of hospitalizations we've ever reported.
Number three.
Lawyers appointed by a federal judge to identify migrant families who are separated by the Trump administration say that they have yet to track down the parents of 545 children. And about two-thirds of those parents were deported to Central America without their children, according to a filing from the ACLU. The Trump administration began separating families in 2017 along some parts of the southern border under a pilot program. Many of the more than 1,000 parents separated from their children under that program had already been deported before a federal judge in California ordered that they be found. Nigerians are in shock after a deadly shooting of peaceful protesters in the biggest city, Lagos, that Amnesty International blamed on security forces. There was no immediate death toll from the incident last evening, in which witnesses say armed gunmen opened fire on a crowd of over 1,000 people to disperse them after a curfew was imposed to end spiraling protests over police brutality. Clayton Kershaw, Cody Bellinger, and Mookie Betts all shine for the Los Angeles Dodgers in Game 1 of the World Series as they beat the Tampa Bay Rays 8-3. Betts homered and stole two bases.
I did a good job tonight, but my main responsibility is to win a World Series, and that's all I'm trying to do.
Game 2 at the neutral Globe Life Field in Texas is tonight.
All right, thank you, Jen. Today, I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive Vice President and Chief Business Development Officer at MEDC, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Josh, what are Michigan's best selling points?
The biggest selling point for Michigan is our pure Michigan quality of life. We also have a diverse and abundant workforce and a business-friendly environment that we think is unmatched. It's also very connected to global supply chain assets. And through a comprehensive suite of programs and services, we can help businesses grow here in this state and also help provide access to our highly skilled workforce, where we have the highest concentration of engineers and some of the greatest skilled trades talent as well. Here in Michigan, we make things, and we think we can be the convergence of technology and manufacturing, and there is no better place to bring your idea or product from concept to reality than here in Michigan.
To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from MEDC, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. Thanks for being with us. On the investment front, it's hard to say if now is one of those calms before the storm, but at least it's a period of relative calm after the coronavirus-induced stock market plunge in February and March, and then the robust rally that followed. And that makes it a decent time to assess how you might have messed up your investments. Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic, has a look at some irrational investment behaviors. Russ, give an example.
One would be focusing on recent events, this recency bias. You know, the market dropped 300 points and you think that it will continue, whereas, you know, there could be no relevance going ahead. We tend to overweight the last day or few days when making decisions. And that can be a problem if we're not keeping things, you know, in proper perspective.
How do you do that with something
like recency bias, for example?
Well, one suggestion they had was make it as part of your investment plan to have like a timeout period where, you know, you have like a 3-day period before you take any action. And I can discuss that in a bit further, but, you know, kind of a timeout, so to speak. But it's not easy.
Yeah.
You know, these are emotions.
Right. Number two, you said blindly following along.
Well, that's the herd behavior. And, you know, in our past as humans, it safety in numbers often was a good idea. Mm-hmm. But when you're dealing with wild market gyrations, it isn't always right because the herd, other investors could be wrong too, and it happens. So I think you just have to try and think for yourself. I mean, we like safety in numbers, but it can get us into trouble at times.
We're speaking with Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic, part of the USA Today network. He's written a piece about irrational ways to make investment decisions. Another one he talked about was trading through overconfidence. How does that work?
Well, that's kind of the reverse. I mean, we've been talking about the market drop earlier this year, and at times like that, I don't think most people were overconfident. But in general, overconfidence bias that leads us to believe that we're better than most other people. And there have been other studies in this realm. For example, Morningstar cited a research that indicated we tend to think we're better than other people driving, for example. They cited a study where 90% of the motorists considered themselves above average drivers. Right. That can't be true. You know, so we tend to be a little bit more overconfident sometimes, kind of making rash decisions without really fully thinking it through.
What about seeking out validation, point number five?
Well, that's cognitive dissonance. We're more susceptible to opening ourselves up to information that confirms that we made the right choice. If you sold GM yesterday, you want to look for news articles that indicate GM is in trouble. It's just, you know, it's an emotional, we want some sort of assurance that we did the right thing. Nothing, I guess, wrong with that, except that it kind of closes us off to a more balanced perspective, more realistic perspective.
Russ Wiles at the Arizona Republic. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Chances are you're spending too many hours of your day and fees out of your pocket doing business banking the old-fashioned way. It's 2020. There's got to be a better, more affordable solution. There is. It's Aslo, a free business checking account with invoicing, bill pay, money transfers, no minimum balance, no fees, and no minimum deposit. And now there's the all-new Aslo Pro Bundle with unlimited envelopes to organize your money, discounted instant transfers, and the ability to set up recurring invoices all for just $10 a month. But because you're listening to this podcast, you can try Aslo Pro free for 14 days at aslo.com/deal. Learn more with a free copy of Aslo's Small Business Starter Guide or get started right now with an Aslo Pro free 14-day trial at aslo.com/deal. There's no minimum deposit required. Get started for free at aslo.com/deal. That's AZLO.com. Aslo is owned by BBVA USA, member FDIC. aslo.com/deal.
Behind the headlines, above the noise, you're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday, October 21. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Justice Department sues Google on antitrust grounds. President Trump wants an independent prosecutor to investigate the Bidens. Negotiators move closer to a coronavirus stimulus agreement. The Senate will vote on Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett next Monday. U.S. and Russia reportedly close to a new nuclear arms deal. Netflix says subscriber growth fell in the third quarter. General Motors introduces an electric Hummer. Dodgers win game one of the World Series. And the 94-year-old's determination to vote. Her story in about 20 minutes. The Los Angeles Dodgers took game one of the World Series last night, beating the Tampa Bay Rays 8-3.
And he pulls one into right center. Back at the track, at the wall, it is gone. Bellinger makes it 2-0 Dodgers here in the fourth of Game 1.
Joe Buck with the call on Fox. Game 2 is tonight. Meanwhile, the Dodgers and Rays operate on opposite ends of the sport's financial spectrum in terms of what they pay their players, yet posted the best records in their respective leagues to reach the World Series. There are arguments about whether this frugality is good for the game. In-depth analysis from Jared Diamond, national baseball writer at the Wall Street Journal. He's with us from the World Series in Arlington. Jared, how do you see it?
This is the ultimate in haves and have-nots in terms of a World Series matchup. On the one side, you have the Dodgers, who really are the epitome of blue blood in baseball. This is a team that has spent more money on players than anybody in the league in the last 7, 8, 9 years. They have seemingly a limitless budget to do so, and it has built them this incredible roster with depth at every position, the ability to just sort of spend very freely on free agents. And we saw that, of course, with the contract extension they gave to Mookie Betts earlier this summer for about $365 million. The Rays, on the other hand, are probably relatively speaking the poorest team in all of baseball. Their revenues are very low. They never spend any money. In fact, their entire payroll in a normal year, which is usually around $65-70 million, is less than what the Dodgers are paying their three biggest stars. So that's a whole team versus three players. That's really the difference here. And yet, in spite of all of that, they're both here in the World Series competing for a championship.
And this all comes down to analytics.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. The Rays, of course, have built this incredible machine by running their team essentially like a hedge fund. It's ruthless. I wouldn't necessarily call it fun all the time. It makes it very difficult, I think, for fans to grow attached to players because they're constantly sort of being changed and shifted out. Players don't really stay in Tampa Bay long because they don't have the resources to sign them once they get too expensive. But thanks to this really incredible front office that they have really cultivated now over the last dozen years, they have found a way to compensate for the shortcomings they have financially. And like other teams have done it, we look at the Oakland A's, the Moneyball A's, who've also found a way to have success with little, but the Rays have done better with even less than the A's have ever done. This is the second time the Rays have been in the World Series. They were there in 2008 as well. They've been very successful pretty much ever since then. And the great irony of this World Series is that their former general manager, Andrew Friedman, the person that really built everything the Rays have accomplished in the last decade, is now the president of the Dodgers. So it's a little bit of a personal matchup there as well.
Speaking with Jared Diamond, national baseball writer at the Wall Street Journal. He's taking a look at the economies of the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Rays as they face each other in the World Series. You quoted the Tampa Bay GM as saying that this is great for baseball. Does that mean it's great for fans? Because I don't know if you run out and buy a Randy Arozarena jersey right now.
Yeah, this is really, I think, the question at hand, and is this good for baseball? And I think it's complicated. On the one hand, there's something very charming about the underdog story,
sure,
and that's what the Rays are. It's really hard not to sort of fall in love with a team of a bunch of guys you've never heard of going up against the team of superstars and potentially beating them. Remember, the Rays, just to get here, had to beat the Yankees, who had the highest payroll in baseball this year. They had to beat the Astros, who had the third highest payroll in baseball this year, and now they're playing the Dodgers, who were number two. So they have a chance to beat 1, 2, and 3 in payroll, where they were number 28 out of 30.
Incredible.
Which is amazing. But on the other hand, and there's certainly a large sect of baseball fans who see it this way, is that there's something perhaps a little disconcerting about rewarding a team that operates like the Rays. You know, right now, baseball's economics are in a very interesting place. We're heading toward the end of the collective bargaining agreement in a year, and it's looking like it's going to be a very, very, very big fight, largely because we've seen around baseball ownership as a group really retrenching, not spending as much on free agents as they once did, not being as competitive in those marketplaces. And a big reason for that is that they're seeing, hey, with data and analytics and player development systems, we don't need to spend a lot to win. And the Rays sort of show that.
Thanks, Jared. Jared Diamond, national baseball writer at the Wall Street Journal, with us from Arlington. It is 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you're looking for a special gift for someone this holiday season, something truly unique, I've got a great idea. An original hand-painted portrait from paintyourlife.com. At paintyourlife.com, you can send any photo or combination of photos, and a world-class artist will transform them into a beautiful portrait at a truly affordable price. I recently had a portrait of our kids done. It's incredible. Now hangs prominently above the fireplace in our den. Taking less than 5 minutes, the order process was a breeze, and our painting arrived in about 3 weeks, packed and handled as if it were the most delicate item ever shipped. At paintyourlife.com, there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded. And right now, as a limited time offer, get 20% off your painting. That's right, 20% off and free shipping. To get this special offer, text the word DEAL to 64,000. That's DEAL to 64,000. Paint your life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Text DEAL to 64,000 for paintyourlife.com. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It is time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we've been looking anywhere and everywhere for signs to lift our spirits this year, and in some cases, literally. One Texas restaurant is telling it like it is as the coronavirus pandemic continues, posting funny commentary on relatable themes defining daily life on a famous outdoor sign. Tex-Mex restaurant El Arroyo is keeping it real amid the ongoing outbreak, and you may have seen some of their messages making the rounds on social media, like, "I just realized my trash goes out more than me," and, "In 20 years, our country will be run by people homeschooled by day drinkers." Another message warned, "Just remember, someone out there is quarantined with your ex." And still another declared, "When this virus is over, I want some of y'all to stay away from me," or still want some of y'all to stay away from me. Fox News says the eatery started sharing the silly signs in the pre-internet 1980s, and in what we're being told is the most important election since at least the last election, it's fitting that a few political messages have made it to the marquee, including, "Is your refrigerator running? Because I might vote for it." And, "What if nobody was president and we all promised real hard just to be cool?"
Very good.
Yes.
It's good stuff. So pre-internet 80s, these guys have been doing this.
They were doing this just for the people driving by you know, on the road, and now they've become kind of internet famous.
Very clever. That would strike me is that you've had a couple of iterations of clever people passing through
right?
Because this is, 40 years now or something.
I wonder if that's part of the job application process, you have to sort of write some down. Yeah, come up with a few ideas to, so that we know that you can work here.
You're right. We all need that entertainment these days.
For sure.
Yeah.
And we've done enough stories, Gordon, about chicken nuggets over the years to know that people will go to great lengths to satisfy a sudden nugget craving. So while it's unfortunate, it's not entirely surprising that an Ohio man decided to take matters into his own hands when he showed up at a closed McDonald's restaurant recently. The 25-year-old, who, yes, was intoxicated, is facing misdemeanor charges after he broke into a McDonald's in Westlake at 1:30 in the morning last week looking for some McNuggets. He was reportedly surprised when he arrived and that no one was there to take his order. In the process, he set off the alarm and police responded to the scene, meeting the man as he exited the restaurant through the front door. He was charged with disorderly conduct while intoxicated.
Mm.
Now, I guess here's the good news is he didn't try and, fry up any McNuggets himself while intoxicated, possibly causing injury or fire or something else.
Right. It strikes me that with some of these stories, you could lay out the facts and I could piece together what happened. If you were to say, man, 25 years old, 1:30 in the morning, fast food restaurant, I could figure out what happened. I would be like, a drunk guy breaks in, needs a fix.
Maybe we should do that. Some kind of ad libs. Mic drop ad libs coming up next week.
I like it. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
For the ones working tirelessly to keep their coworkers safe, for the ones rising to new challenges, for the ones rebuilding stronger than before, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, and 24/7 support. It's part of our commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. Thanks for spending time with us. How about this stat? For the first time in 15 years, banks are not charging you more to access your own money. A new analysis from Bankrate finds the average cost of an out-of-network ATM fee actually dipped slightly compared to 2019, falling to $4.64, the lowest level since 2016. Bankrate says the dip can be attributed to many banks offering temporary fee waivers related to the pandemic. It includes the surcharge banks hit non-customers with who use their ATMs and the penalties that banks charge their own customers when they use the ATM of another bank. To avoid the fees completely, of course, you can stick to your bank's ATM network. Many institutions offer digital maps of ATM locations. Another option is getting cash back at the point of sale when using a debit card, like at a grocery store or pharmacy. However, banks did increase other types of fees. The average overdraft fee hit a new record of $33.47 this year, up from $23 and change a decade ago. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
White House representatives and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi both say enough progress was made Tuesday to justify further stimulus talks today with the aim of getting a package voted on before November 3rd. But a bigger risk to a deal may come from Senate Republicans. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told his fellow Republicans at a lunch yesterday that he has advised the White House against a pre-election deal.
Number two.
Health experts say COVID-19 cases will begin to rapidly accelerate in a week as the country topped 60,000 new infections yesterday, triple what the daily average was back in June when restrictions had begun to ease. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
To the extent travel among the states or between the states is not essential, it should be avoided.
The national 7-day average has increased at least 18% since the previous week.
Number three.
President Trump is urging Attorney General William Barr to initiate an investigation into Joe Biden and his son Hunter Trump on Fox.
He's got to act, and he's got to act fast. He's got to appoint somebody. This is major corruption, and this has to be known about before the election.
Trump's comments came after the New York Post suggested the former vice president was involved in or benefited from his son's overseas work. Biden, in an interview with WISN in Wisconsin.
This is the same garbage Rudy Giuliani, Trump's henchman. It's the last-ditch effort in this desperate campaign to smear me and my family.
A Justice Department spokeswoman declined comment. Google's partnership with Apple is at the heart of the Justice Department's antitrust lawsuit claiming Google misused its power in an anti-competitive manner. It has long been known that Google relies on search traffic from Apple's popular line of phones. Google's flagship search engine is the preset default on Apple's Safari phone browser. Tropical storm Epsilon strengthened to a hurricane last night as it moves on a projected path that could take it close to Bermuda. It's expected to strengthen as it approaches Bermuda late tomorrow. If you have a couple $100,000 laying around and always wanted some movie memorabilia, you'll get your chance to bid on it in December. The patent leather boots worn by Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, Tom Cruise's Top Gun bomber jacket, and the helmet worn by Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan. Just a few of the items that will be auctioned off.
All right, pretty cool. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. When a 94-year-old from Michigan didn't receive her absentee ballot, she took her civic duty to the next level. Mildred Madison insisted that she had to vote early and in person, but to make that happen, her son had to drive her more than 600 miles round trip. CNN says Ms. Madison, who lives in Detroit, has been staying with her son Julian in Zion, Illinois. Since September of last year, when she wasn't feeling well, she decided to stay put when the pandemic happened and says she requested a ballot be sent to Illinois. While there's still a chance the ballot may come in the mail, and Ms. Madison said the voting office said they had sent the ballot, she didn't want to take any chances. The mother-son duo set off for Detroit around 6:30 in the morning on October 12 and made it to Detroit City Hall just before noon. The drive was about 330 miles each way, and they did it all in one day.
That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.